Muskie 360 Podcast. A Jaybird, how are you?
360
in the house.
Wu-Tang
Clan ain't nothing to fuck with.
I'm in the 715 and the 360.
I have no
clue. How are you doing today?
I am sunburnt.
Oh,
I am
nice.
On Pepsi number 5.
Good.
Been on the boat all day with some cops.
Officers.
Been on the boat with some cops.
Beautiful.
They gave me a badge today. I'm a cop now, Jay.
You're one of the boys in blue. That's cool.
I'm looking to crack some skulls, boys. Watch out. It's coming. I don't think what they gave me makes me a cop, but I'm going to pretend it does.
Nice.
So you'll see me in the arrest records here shortly.
Probably. You getting some fish this week though, huh?
I am getting some fish
around here, man. It's been beautiful. We've been in the 70s for at least 3 days now.
It has been warmer in Wisconsin than it has been here.
Okay.
You're telling me. It's crazy. Me and you talk every day, believe it or not. Me and Jay, we don't pretend to be friends on the podcast. We are friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Somewhat.
Yep.
Don't get too comfortable, Jay. Don't get too comfortable.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Trust me.
Gotta keep them on their toes.
Yeah.
Now,
it's looking beautiful. Ice is gone everywhere, and it's early April, and it's ahead of schedule, and it's going to be a good season.
You know, that's the thing, is the early ice. You said between your home and the Muskie shop, there was no ice left.
No, everything a couple days ago was gone, so...
I heard from a little birdie just minutes ago that they went over on one of the chains over there and were seeing 49 and 50 degrees in the shallows.
No kidding. They're starting to get panfish everywhere. So
yeah, it is going to be crazy, you know, as far as the fishery. Get out there and bass fish. When does bass fishing open, Jay? For you Wisconsinites.
General opener is first weekend in May when you can start to fish for everything except muskie, which is Memorial Day.
Right.
So got about a month till general opener when you can go out and walleye fish and pike and all that. But panfish is open and new this year, bass catch and release is open. So I'm looking forward to that actually.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is with those warm temperatures, though, man, it's going to fire up. Usually it is a better fishing season when you have that quick opener. I would say this because I know we got some questions already this week in regards to what to do about opener and all that stuff. But I'll tell you this much is it's going to be a different ball game than your typical opener for the last couple years.
Yeah. The last several years, really, we've had late ice outs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of affected the whole season around because we have such a short season, you know, it's a short growing season. It's a not just for the fish, but I mean, you know, for the weeds and everything develops slower. And if it's behind it's like the lakes can't get caught up sometimes, you know? So this year's gonna be different. And I mean, last time we had a year like this wasn't that long ago.
Right.
5, 6, 7 years ago or something like that. We had an ice out in March. It was just crazy early. Because it's usually late April. It was a month early, and the whole year was great.
Right. Fish are active. You know, it's going to be a different season opener. It just simply will be, unless there's like some crazy freeze coming, and I don't think there is.
Well, hope not. Fingers crossed.
Right. So it won't be your typical season opener. I'm telling you what, if the report I got was true that they were seeing some 49-degree water already, which is nuts... When are they going to spawn next week? You know,
it's supposed to cool down dramatically next week, but we should have a weatherman on to really get dialed in with this.
The problem is with weather's tricky, but we did find the musky meteorologist, John. I got a segment coming up from him here in just a few minutes, but I wanted to cover some stuff, Jay.
Okay.
We had an old fashioned possum hunt. We had a possum hunt. The winner is Bill Goodale. Bill found your possum, Jay.
Nice. Okay.
He found your possum. So, Bill, get a hold of Jay there at the Muskie Shop. You're going to get a Smitty Grapple from the meanest guys in the North Woods, the Smitties. They're going to get you set up. Again, guys, I had to make Jay giggle. The Smitties are the nicest people you ever meet. They're wonderful. Don't cross them.
Yeah, that's what you think.
You know, don't cross the Smitties. You know,
they make some great lures.
They do.
One of the widest ranges of musk. I mean, everything from leaders to hook sharpeners, and everything's top notch.
Top notch. Just don't cross them. Anyway, they got you set up with that Smitty Grapple, Bill. Get a hold of Jay at the Muskie Shop. Big stuff as far as housekeeping stuff. Sort of a cool project. The old wiferino's been working on and some techno stuff. If you have been dreaming about fishing up north, right? Let's say you're going, hey, I'm going to come up and go to the Muskie Bash on July 17th at the Muskie Shop. The Muskie Bash with the Smitties, Steve, Paul, and Joe Booger, right? All that fun stuff.
We've been talking about it a little bit last few weeks.
Yep. And you want to go on a guide trip.
Right.
But you don't know who to go with. The Muskie Shop Guide Service. So there's a new website up for the Muskie Shop Guide Service. You can find it at themuskieshop.com or go to, what is it, www.muskieshop.com.
Too many W's. MuskieShopGuideService.com.
How many
W's? And let me tell you right now.
How many W's?
Just three.
Just three. That's all you got to type in. Just three. Just three. Just three. My apologies.
It is such a good-looking site. I compliment the site designer to the utmost. Fantastic job. It's beautiful.
Jody
Michaels. Jody Michael did a great job with that.
Michael Michaels.
Man. Yeah, it's really slick looking, and it just covers everything. So if you got a question or are intrigued about what it's like and how easy it is, click on that. There's nothing easier.
Okay.
So get the information you need.
You can get
really, yeah.
I want to look here real quick, guys, and I'm serious. You want to go on a guide trip? Who do we have as guides? You go, well, I don't want to go with a crappy guide, so who are the guides? First one up, Steve Herbeck.
Who?
Checkmate. Steve Boom. Herbeck. Boom.
The legend.
Matt Rayleigh. Boom.
Boom.
Total bad dude. Right? Mm-hmm. Jim Schulte. Al Frost. Stephen Paul. How do you say this guy's name? Oh, Stephen Paul. He's on there.
Stephen Paul.
He guides for the Muskie Shop. Elmer Jensen. Doug the Big Ticket Smith. Tracy Crail.
Big Ticket Smith.
Josh Tracy? Krieger. Buddy, he guides with me down here too. He is a thunderous musky fisherman. Fred Palmero, Matt Dassau, Dan Droppengeezer. Listen, it is an illustrious list of some of the baddest dudes fishing the North Woods, right?
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, I look at this and I go, amazing stuff. Like I said, Frosty, I think Al Frost is great. Elmer Jensen. Talk about a hoot. I heard, rumor has it, that Elmer will take you out trolling for 6 hours and never blink.
He's a stare down master.
He's a stare down master. He will stare you down while you troll. If you want to feel like you're extra short, go out with Doug. Doug's 7'9".
Doug, a big boy.
Doug's a big boy. Like I said, it's something we're really proud of around the shop is the Muskie Shop Guide Service. You want to go with the best. And what I like about it is just that I know everybody on here is serious. Like every guide on here is legit. They're the real deal. So if you're dreaming about a Northwoods trip, check it out. MuskieShopGuideService.com. Anyway, speaking more Muskie Shop stuff here, folks, just beating you over the head with it. Yeah, bump boards have been hard to get, believe it or not.
And darn near impossible to get this year.
It's because of the this and because of the that and the supply chain. So there's a new brand out on the shop, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's called the Wrecking Rack.
Yes, sir.
And the quality is absolutely awesome on these things. And
I like
a little bit. It's a basic design. Mm-hmm. It's pretty straightforward. You know, it's a folding, floating, extremely durable. The hinges are great. We really checked them out and did our homework mm-hmm. with the guy that's making them before we brought them in. And they look fantastic. And anyway, they just came in, I think, over the weekend.
Yeah. What I like about them.
They even make a black one, which is different.
Match your boat.
I was talking to Jody Michael the mm-hmm. other day. And I said, because we were like, a black bump board. She said, well, the heat, isn't that going to be kind of hot on them? I go, it doesn't matter. It's the one Steve's going to get.
To match it.
She goes, that doofus probably will get a black one just to match his carpeting.
That I have no carpet. That's the fun part.
Maybe she didn't say carpeting, but to match the inside of the boat.
Does the carpet match the bump board, boys?
Here's the thing. It's a new bump board. Thank goodness someone's making one.
Well, they're just hard to get.
The Tease Tackle one have been so hard to get.
Well, here's the big deal with this thing.
What?
Is that the numbers are etched into the board. Other bump boards scratch.
Yep.
And you start getting if you're bumping enough fish, it's a great problem to have. Or if you're using your bump board enough, it'll just get messed up from cleaning it. These are actually carved into the board, with probably a laser cutter. So they're not, your marks and your hash marks and your ticks aren't going anywhere. One thing I'll say is this, the black bump board is designed to not stand out against darker carpet. So it's not what's that big white thing? So it just sort of blends in the background. Again, if you're going to use a bump board and you're going to measure fish, you're going to get that thing wet and cold first. Always. White bump board, black bump board, it doesn't matter. Get it wet, right? Don't go after them dry.
This thing won't remove slime. It's very slick and it cleans off easy, unlike other bump boards we've had that if you get slime on there and any blood or whatever,
clean it off. Get you that and a float ruler and you're good to go. But that's a pretty cool new thing. Another thing we got to mention, folks, and I'll stop talking about stuff when I let you know we got a free shipping weekend coming up.
Yep, we're going to do that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this weekend, April 9, 10, 11.
Uh-huh.
That is free shipping on everything. Oversized items like rods and tackle boxes are excluded, except for the shield rods, which are still on sale with free shipping.
Free shipping on shield rods. Get them while you can.
Oh, I got to give a shout out to, Tom. And a shout out to Adam that called and talked with me today, and they ordered some stuff and they were getting hooked up. One guy's even hooking up his dad with a rod and reel setup, who's never musky fished before. So, guys, thanks for calling and good luck fishing this season with your new gear.
Love it.
They were really cool.
One thing I want to mention, and guys, I'm tired and I'm. And we're covering all the housekeeping. I've gotten so many emails about the Spitfire Kamikaze. There are a very limited amount of Spitfire Kamikaze in stock right now. Some of the collars are already sold out. So check them out. If you've heard me talking about them, they're in the store, but not for long because these things are hard to get. So there's the regular full-size Kamikaze, the mid-size, and the mini. I don't even know if there's mini mids left. I'm looking here at the old website arena.
I think there's just a few of each size.
We're talking ones and twos.
We got a ton of them in, I think, Friday, and they sold like wildfire. It was crazy.
So get in the game if you want to hear about it, because here in a minute it is going to be, especially for you Wisconsin guys where it's warming up, it's going to be time for Chatterbaits O'Mercer to opener.
Yeah.
Because that's old hillbilly trick, man. You know, don't break out the blades first, break out the chatterbaits, and it is like greased lightning. But anyway, Jay, how's the weather up there?
It's fantastic. Waiting for the next round of thunderstorms, actually.
Thunder
in a row.
Suck. Anyway, folks, I want to share with you the Musky Meteorologist. All right, folks, as promised, Musky 360 has now our very own Musky Meteorologist. Welcome to the podcast, John. How you doing, John?
I am doing fantastic, Steve. How are you?
I am great. John is the real deal. I have fished with him. He's a heck of a musky fisherman, and you have a degree in meteorology.
That's correct. I spent 4 years. I have the diploma to prove it, and I have, nice. You know, at some point, you learn that D stands for diploma.
Right.
Because what most people don't realize is that when you're a meteorologist, you don't take classes about clouds. You take classes about the physics of why clouds form. So nice. There's a lot of calculus and physics and chemistry that, you got to do all that stuff. And sometimes a D stands for diploma. C's get degrees as well. So.
Absolutely. This is a Musky podcast. A D's is all we need.
Exactly.
But yeah, you have actually been an on-air meteorologist.
That's correct.
You've been, hello, and now the local forecast is, tomorrow it's 65.
You know, so, pointing at the green screen, that's me.
That was me, I should say. He's been there, done that. And so what I wanted to do, the big thing for the first shtick from you, the dreaded word cold front, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I throw it around. I talk about it all the time. How do you get over a cold front? That's like the scary word, right? Just give me like a definite, what is a cold front? So people understand what a cold front actually is.
So basically a cold front is just a shift in air mass, right? It's the leading edge of a change in air mass where warmer and sometimes moister air is being pushed out, and you have cooler and drier air that's coming in. That's all it is. It's the leading edge. That front itself is the leading edge of that change in air mass.
And is that like, you know, that the lack of humidity, henceforth the bluebird skies?
Absolutely. I mean, the drier the air is, the more sinking or downward motion that you have in air, which some people call high pressure, mm-hmm. right? Because you have air that's coming downward, the pressure is rising. That generally leads to clear skies. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, you get the bright blue skies, and when you're a musky fisherman, bright blue skies in the middle of summer are, you know, they're great for the recreational boaters, but trying to catch fish, that presents kind of a problem at times.
Right, right.
And you're the musky expert, Steve. I'm just here to talk about weather, so I'll let you elaborate on the fishing.
You know, we've done it a million times, and he's a pretty damn good musky angler. He won't say so himself, but he is. The thing, you know, so the culprit, that's just that shift. We both
Correct.
Know, and with you being a musky angler, we're alluding to cold fronts bring a lack of activity from fish, which could be anything, which is whether it be light penetration in the water column, you know, just things are not moving as much. The fish can't see as well.
Absolutely.
That's the bad trend.
You know, and when we talk cold fronts, you know, especially mm-hmm. for those of us that are more northern anglers, me being from Minnesota, mm-hmm. You know, you tend to think cold fronts in the summer, but you've got cold fronts in the fall. And oftentimes behind a cold front in the fall, especially in a northern latitude, you've got actually low cloud cover, you know, mm-hmm. solid stratiform overcast skies. You know, and any musky angler that's fished in the fall in, you know, northern Minnesota, Canada, Wisconsin, you know, you get a cold front, you'll have uniform cloud cover, and that's when you start to see your first you know, rain to snow showers mm-hmm. you know, in that fall time of year. So cold front doesn't always mean clear skies. You know, if you get a disturbance, you have moisture trapped up aloft, and you have that cold air coming in, you can actually you know, in the fall is more of a cloudy period of time, post frontal It can be, I should say. So
right. And the other question is this, and we'll cover one more big musky fishing basic for the weather, since this is heady stuff for some of us. I de-equaled my grade school diploma, and that's all I have. They cut us loose at fourth grade in West Virginia. Me and Cody Dalton, we graduated fourth. We're the only two people in the state, me and Cody Dalton. There's me, him, and a goat, and they cut us loose at fourth grade to go musky fishing. Barometric pressure, right? And I'll tell you, I make up stuff all the time. Well, you know, why is the fish in bed today? Barometric pressure. You look at a guy, you just throw it
out
there.
Right.
Explain what barometric pressure is just in general, because the terminology, how it affects things, maybe a little bit fishing wise, but what's going on with just the term barometric pressure?
Sure. It's just basically the downward pressure of air, the measurement of air pressure. Mm-hmm. And in the old days, they figured out that liquid mercury, which is a metal, but it's mm-hmm. a liquid, is the best measure of how you can measure the change in air pressure, because you could fit it in a barometer. You could make a barometer out of water, but it would have to be like 35 feet tall for it to actually work. Right. Any liquid will respond to changes in pressure, which, if you think about it, and I use the water example, because what are we fishing for? Where do they live? They live in water. So any changes in downward pressure on the water are obviously going to affect, fish that are in that environment. So, when you hear, it doesn't matter if you're an old school, everybody's got a grandfather that fished. Mm-hmm. And what are they looking at? They're looking at the weather. Oh, the pressure is going to fall today. Well, what is that going to do? Well, usually that means, you hear the prefrontal fishing. It's the best, right?
Right.
So how's that changing the environment for the fish? Mm-hmm. And that's really, barometric pressure is a measure of that. Post frontal, the barometer, pressure is going to be rising because mm-hmm. air is sinking behind a cold front.
Right.
In advance of a cold front, it's going to be rising, lower pressure. So if you think about it, what causes thunderstorms? Mm-hmm. In advance of a cold front, you have lift. So you have lift, you have air that's leaving the surface. So the pressure on the ground is actually falling. There's less air pressure in advance mm-hmm. of a cold front. Behind the cold front, the air is more dense, drier, and its pressure rapidly rises once a cold front passes. So you'll see that. All you have to do, anybody with a backyard, one of these weather sensor packages mm-hmm. you can buy at your local big box store, when a cold front comes through, you're going to see that arrow shooting upward because pressure's rising.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's all related, it's all related.
Right. And that surface pressure, who knows? I mean, they're feeling it. Is it affecting swim bladders? Is it affecting forage movement?
Right. I mean, these are predators that sense, vibration and motion. Well, I'm sure they sense air pressure as well. They definitely,
that's the thing, how to fish, not to know how to go too deep. Right.
Right.
Of that nature. They're sensitive. You see how all these frontal movements obviously influence musky activity, and those different pressures and in betweens, there is direct corollaries between what they're doing and barometric pressure and frontal movements.
Absolutely.
And just a little bit of understanding. Well, I can't thank you enough. We're going to have plenty of questions. We get so many weather related questions, and now we have our own musky meteorologist, John. Put your hands together, John. Send in your questions that are weather based. Who knows?
Absolutely. And we'll absolutely. I'm just super happy. I'm one of the seven people that was listening 2 weeks ago you were looking for a meteorologist, and I was able to jump in.
Listen, there's a guy named Bill that said, I'm not a meteorologist, but I'd be happy to dance for you. I don't know what that was about, but you got that. But guys, we'll get some more questions answered. Hope that helped. Thank you so much, John.
Absolutely, Steve. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Jay Bird, what did you learn?
What have I not learned talking with you and listening tonight? I tell you, that was awesome.
I love it.
I hope that guy can be a part of the podcast
often, you know?
He will be. What other podcast has the musky meteorologist? Like, come on, man. Listen, we do it for you, our friends. So, the guy's awesome. I love it.
Anything to get you guys dialed in.
Like I said, I mean, I've read up on this stuff and you know, there's some things I'm smart good about, and there's some things I'm dumb. Understanding a lot of the weather jargon, you go, huh?
Yeah.
And so we're, if you got, like I told you in that segment, if you got weather questions, let us know. We'll get them answered as best as we can, just how to read it. But anyway, Jay, it is time for Q&A. Oh, yeah. Also, too. Do you know where you're at? You're in musky country, baby. Anyway, so Will says, musky country.
Ooh. America.
America. Sorry. Taking a drink of my Pepsi here. Just about to get buck wild. Will says, what are your tips for early season muskies in the Midwest and in the South? Okay. I'll just throw it out here. It's all the same, and it always comes down to downsizing, speed, and depth control, right? I saw this question earlier. I usually don't pre-read them, but I saw it, and is what I alluded to is everybody's going to be asking. I want to focus on that Midwest bite because I genuinely think by the time it is legal to throw for muskies, it will be different than it has been for the last few years, right?
I think you're right on with that. Yeah, I agree.
A few weeks ago, we were like answering a question about opener. And we were going, find the warm water, go to the north end, blah, 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 blah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That could not be the case. Right? If reports that I'm hearing on water temps up there, by opener, it could be... I mean, if there's really 49 degree water in like the super, super, super shallows on the edges of these things already, now that could be superficial temps due to sun penetration, all this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But if the trend continues, you could see way higher than usual temperatures that time of year, right? What I'm going to encourage everybody to do is use your brain and go, what were the temps when I started last year? Jay, do you remember what it was on the, what's the surface temp on opener last year, you think?
Oh man, put me on the spot. I'm trying to think. I think ice out was about a week late last year, if I remember. Uh-huh. So it was like right here in the Minocqua area, it was like late April.
Right.
And it was not a super warm May, if I remember correctly.
Uh-huh.
And you know, and 50s.
Right.
You know, just, you know, pre-spawn and all that jazz, you know.
I mean, theoretically, right? We're here, we're early on the ice. It seems like it's going to be a hot summer.
Yeah.
Be prepared for the pattern to be advanced by a month. What I would be thinking is not, what did I do on opener last year? What was I doing a month after opener?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was I doing 2 weeks, 3 weeks after opener? Be open and flexible in that regard because it might not be the 5-inch slammer bite. It might not be 500 series booker tails and giant killers. Those fish might have moved beyond that and already getting into some reasonable presentations, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's something to consider. Now, could that all change next week? And we go, well, you know, Jay, how's the weather? And you got 48 inches of snow. It can happen. But at this trajectory, even with some, you know, you're going to have some cooler nights and some ebb and flow in the weather patterns. But with that being said, if things hold reasonably around where they're at right now, it could be pretty warm by the time you can throw a musky bait legally.
I think you're right. I mean, I think, you know, for all the folks in Wisconsin and Minnesota and those upper Midwest states, you know, look at it being, and Minnesota's a week after us. They're like early June when they open, that holds true right now for their musky season. You know, you might have to, you know, speed it up and not throw the tiny stuff. Maybe, like you said, it would be a little bit more advanced than we've been seeing lately. And, you know, there could be some temps in the 60s, and, you know, spawning could be muskies could be done spawn. They could be spawned out by Memorial Day. That could happen.
Recovered and ready to go.
I know. I remember, not that long ago, seeing some fish caught around the 10th of June around here that had eggs in them still.
Yeah. And that happens.
That could happen. Yeah.
Right. You get a late year and, you know, late ice outs, and you're going, man, this is just dragging on forever. But the biggest tip I would say is right now is just be flexible in your game plan, because we all get in habits, and we get in these habits. Well, last year I did this. Well, last year's not this year. The weather's not the same. The water temps aren't the same. So the way the weather looks as of today, I would be considering an advanced game plan, right? Thinking ahead, thinking, you know, I'm going to check this, check that, but I'm going to be prepared and ready to go with some baits that are more musky-esque instead of the early season finesse. That's usually not the game plan. Usually you're looking down the barrel of cold temps and all that, but I think a lot of people are going to get left in the dust if this continues, where they're going, well, they're doing what you should have been doing, right? You should have been fishing small last year. You know, don't get caught up in that. Well, I pay attention to the conditions. I still think the biggest thing right now is going to be scouting, Jay.
We talked about that last week. Yeah.
I'm especially the stuff you've told me this week's gone up there. Scout the water. The water's going to be open soon, man. Scout it out. I can't tell you enough. Go bass fishing. Dave says, with Canada closed, what should I do in regards to a muskie trip? Do I go to Wisconsin? Do I go to Minnesota? Do I go to Michigan? Are the waters beat up? Are all the fish all the fish been caught? What should I do? And do you guys think Canada will open this year? Meow. Meow.
Yeah. I think all of the above.
I mean,
you got a place you always want to check out, Minnesota or northern Wisconsin or the Upper Peninsula. Check it out. Perfect opportunity. Are they getting beat up beyond all belief? No.
No, not today.
People complained about that last year. I heard some people going, these lakes are getting, you know, overpressured because Canada's closed. Not true. There might have been more people in Minocqua than normal in our area, you know, for certain stretches of the summer.
Right.
But a lot of them were just on vacation.
Right.
You know, they were renting a kayak and whatnot.
Not what you'd call a serious muskie angler.
No, just dabbling in it maybe here and there, but it's like, no. There's plenty of water. A lot of lakes around here.
The thing of, you know, asking, you know, if we think Canada's going to happen, I'll tell you, we don't get real serious on the podcast often, but I'll tell you that flatly, okay? If you don't want to hear about the real world, cover your ears. Here's my take.
Earmuffs.
Canada has socialized medicine. It is far better for them to keep us out than to bring us in and risk the chance of people needing to go to the hospital. And they're struggling with a vaccine there, right? And their struggles of a vaccination are going to slow down any chance of that opening for recreational traffic. I've gotten tons of emails, phone calls, everything from friends, from podcast listeners asking what my take is. My solid take is this. They have a stance right now that says now is not the time. Their department of like the equivalent of Homeland Security, that's their thing, is now is not the time to travel. They still have people separated at the border that are like family members or loved ones. I don't think by this summer they're going to go, oh yeah, come over here and go walleye fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm not trying to be the bearer of bad news. I hope that it opens. The second it opens, I am running and I'm going. But the real look on this thing is they don't have the vaccines. They are socialized in their medical care, so it's far cheaper for the government to subsidize things than it is to pay for hospital beds if needed, right? I don't talk about serious things or real things very often, and I don't want to, but I'm just trying to help people look at what I see is the logic of the matter of why the borders are going to stay closed. I don't think we're going to see this thing open up before the fall at earliest.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I hate it. I'm done talking serious. That would be my take on it. With that being considered, we all want to have a great summer. We all have a great musky season. I would be looking at the classic stuff in Minnesota. Yes, that has seen more pressure. Yes, the Northwoods have seen more pressure, but it's not like in your head where you go, every lake is 4,000 boats.
Mm-mm.
I always think if you've been dreaming about like, hey, I always go to Canada, but I've never fished Minnesota. I've never fished southern Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin. Go check it out and just chalk it up to experience. And like maybe in 3 years, you'll be like, hey, when all that stuff was going on and we couldn't go to Canada, I checked out these lakes in Wisconsin. Oh, cool. Right? Go.
Yeah. If you live somewhere where you got like a 4 or 5 hour drive to take this trip, maybe even 6, 7 hours, which isn't that bad.
Nah.
For the price of going to Canada, you could probably do 2 or 3 different trips.
Yeah.
And explore some new water that way.
Go fish
one way of looking
Ohio.
At it.
Go fish New York. You know, there's whether I think Chautauqua, you know, is it Chautauqua, I think, or something? I don't
know.
In
New York.
You know, there's all these like different little, go do a cool adventure that in a few years when everybody's going to Canada every July, you can go, man, it was cool when we went and fished that one place.
I'm glad we did that.
Right.
And that's probably, you know, once Canada opens, we're going to focus on that again.
Buddy, I'll tell you what, my experience with Minnesota is me driving past it while I go to the border. You know,
okay.
It's like later dudes, you know, I drive through it and I'm like, I'm out of here. I'm headed. Well,
yeah. Not out of any reason other than you're going to Canada. And
oh,
you have to
right.
Drive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, No, I just hate Minnesota. No, it's just, I've never stopped there. And it's like one of these things, like this summer, it's probably on my game plan to go, heck man, I've driven through here a billion times, but I just truck on through. Check something out. That would be my thing, man. Just be positive. Canada will open. And when it opens, you better be there. All hell's going to break loose. I can tell you that much. But, you know, just plan a trip that you know is going to happen. Go somewhere you've always wanted to go. That's sort of my thought process. Go north, go south, go east, go west. Check something out. There's tiger muskies all over the west. You know, go to Wisconsin, go to the friggin' muskie shop. Never been to the muskie shop. Well, go up there and fish Eagle River, Boulder Junction, Minocqua, all that fun stuff. Go to Hayward. You know, just go and experience something, because it's, I'll say this, and again, I won't be serious anymore. It's not all about the fish. If your muskie fishing is about catching fish, I pity you.
It's a nice bonus to have.
It is. I call muskie fishing 10 hours of work for 10 seconds of excitement. So if you don't enjoy the other 9 hours, 55 minutes and, you know, 50 seconds. Right? So go somewhere you've always wanted to go, that like, I always wanted to fish this lake, and go do it. You know, you've been dreaming about St. Clair, go do it. Whatever. That would be my take. Go somewhere and check it out and do something you haven't done before. Matt says, I struggle on season opener in Wisconsin. I've tried all the small stuff. I've tried slow stuff. I've tried fast stuff. What am I doing wrong? Probably everything. I hope I don't suck too bad. I'm trying my best. Meow from Sad Musky Matt.
Oh,
meow.
No, he's not doing anything wrong. He's probably talking about the last few years, what we just talked about 5 minutes
literally,
ago.
Yeah, we were just there,
you know,
Matt.
You know, you're fishing that first week. They just aren't active.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just coming off of ice out 2 weeks prior to the opener, you know.
They're like, whoa, it's cold.
Yeah, yeah.
That time of year with this year might be different, but like Jay just said, I mean, yeah, you're seeing people catch fish, but you're not seeing everybody else that wasn't catching fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the dangers of social media. You don't see nobody posts, hey, I've got my butt kicked for 4 days in a row. You know, you might see,
you don't see too many pictures like that. No,
right.
You see pictures from the previous year sometimes,
right.
You know, I had a great weekend, you know, it's just like, you know, the whole, you know, like on the gram, as you call it.
Right. The gram.
you know, hearing about people's vacations. Well, it's like, oh, that vacation was 2 years ago, you know.
Right. You hear about people's, oh, Jay. And I know what you just said. That's funny.
Don't go there. Don't go there.
My vacation for two. Sorry, inside joke. Oh, man. I love Greece in the summer. Anyway, it's one of those things that, yeah, don't compare, Matt. Don't compare your success to everybody else's highlight reel on social media, because who cares? If you're struggling.
Yeah, a lot of it's not real. Yeah.
Right.
So,
if you're
struggling on an
opener, dude, just keep running the play. This is, I love what Booker says, it's a war of attrition. Are you willing to pound it out? If you're going out for a couple hours at a time and you're going, why am I not catching fish? Well, you're not putting in the time, right? Spend as much time as you can, right? Get out there as many times as you can, so you have as many opportunities as possible. Make sure you're running your downsize play. Make sure your figure eights are good. Make sure your mechanics overall are good. Okay. If you're doing good retrieves, good figure eights, and you're fishing the right pieces of water because you've done your homework, you'll connect eventually. That would be my take there. You know, just keep your head up and your rod down.
keep in mind the opening weekend in northern Wisconsin usually is not overly productive. It just isn't because it's early.
Would it be better, Jay, if I said keep your rod up and your head down? Or does that just sound, that just sounds weird, doesn't it? Keep your rod down and your head up, not your rod up and your head down.
Yep, that's the one.
That's the one. My apology. No rod up. Don't get your rod up, right? Just checking. All right, Carl says, hi. Really still loving the podcast. Love Jay on the podcast. He's awesome, awesome, awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Jay, this guy thinks you're awesome, apparently.
Wow, okay. Thank you. Thank I guess you.
That's yeah, all. Well, he thinks you're awesome, Jay. He didn't say, hey, you're okay. Tell the guy he's awesome, Jay.
Yep. What's his name?
Carl.
Carl. Hey, Carl. We appreciate it.
Say he's awesome, Jay. Anyway.
You're awesome, Carl.
There you go. That's what I was looking for. Carl, you're awesome. Anyway, he says, listening to recent ones, I understand the benefits of a 9-6 rod for stress on my back. When I looked online, I didn't see any shield rods in this length, only up to 9. Are there plans in the near future this summer to sell a 9'6" shield rod? You know, are there other brands currently that are available? He said, I saw Shimano Skix rods. He said, I'm a beginner and use bucktails and topwater. I'm working to learn jerkbaits and cranks. Will an extra heavy rod be too much for this versatile range of baits? So here's the thing.
Yeah. You go ahead.
Flat out. I'll just throw this. The extra heavy rod's going to be a little bit heavy, I think, for a versatile rod. Jay, what is the plan on the 9-6 shield rod?
You don't want to hear this.
Okay.
I don't know if I told you this.
You probably
remember
did.
When they said it was looking at probably July for that shipment? It's looking like September now.
Okay. Well, that is the world.
It is what it is.
Yeah, it's the world we live in, supply chain.
Yep. So we're going to probably miss the summer on those. Okay. We've got one prototype at the shop. It's for sale for $45,000.
I will kill you. That is my rod. I want it now. Folks, you're about to hear a full-blown muskie fight here on the Muskie 360 podcast where I just go off on Jay.
Steve's like, give me that rod now.
Give me your rod.
I'm going creaking with that thing.
I will go creaking.
Listen, no, but
don't make me stick Cody Dalton on you.
Cody Dalton.
Cody Dalton.
Hey, Cody. Okay. What were we talking about? 9-6 rod?
Shimano Skix. So here's the thing.
You've got a Skix or two, and you like those things.
This request goes out to all the lovers. This is a Shimano Skix. That was my best Casey Kasem. I didn't do a good job.
That was terrible.
You're terrible. Don't talk down to me. This is why I have PSDT. OPP from doing the podcast. You're mean, Jay. I have big feelings, and you hurt them all the time.
I try.
Hold on, I gotta check, hey, folks. I'm about to text Jody Michael live on the air.
You are?
Yeah. I'm gonna say, bring me more Pepsi. Why?
Isn't she in the next room?
Please. Yeah.
You communicate digitally from room to room in your house?
What am I supposed to do? Hey! 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 Hey!
Mom!
Mom!
More meatloaf!
Me need tendies and Pepsi. Anyway, back to rods, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I actually have, and I fish it quite a bit, the Shimano Skix 9.6 Heavy. It's really versatile. I would say this. I love that rod in the sense that it is a better fit and finish than any rods at its price point.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's what I'll say about that rod. It, for some reason, people just didn't gravitate towards it. Jay, you could almost say at the shop, and I'm not trying to be offensive, it's a bit of a woof woof. It's a dog, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's a higher end entry. It's kind of like, St. Croix got some higher end rods. Right. They don't sell like wildfire. It's a very particular customer that's going to want to dish out a little bit more than, your middle of the road rods.
What's the price point on that rod?
400, I think.
Okay. Here's the deal.
350? Let me look. Yeah,
here's Jody Michael. Jay wanted to know why I just don't yell across the house. I was trying to be classy about it. That'll do. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Garcon. Jody Michael just topped off my Pepsi, folks. A little hand clap. Thank you very much.
Hey, Jody. Can she hear me?
No, she can't.
Oh.
But anyway, back to the rods. So the Shimano Skix 9.6, it's $400. I get it. That's pricey in some regard. Before the shield rods, that was my main rod. It held up like a champ. I fished it since they came out every day. Like, I'm on the water nonstop, troll it, cast it, pounders, rattle traps, the whole bit. The one thing I love about that rod, and Jay, it's one thing we did on the shield rod, that it has a very similar grip. It's got a really nice trigger on that rod. One thing that's really cool on the Skix rod is it has a double locking mechanism for your reel, right? So it's like one of those fancy features, but your reel, the tension screw, what do you call that, Jay? The screw down for your reel?
The spool tension knob?
No.
The thing, like a magnetic drag?
No, the thing that screws your actual reel seat to the rod.
Oh, it's the real seat.
Real seat.
I don't know. Beyond that, I'm not sure.
It's that nut you twist.
Oh, that's, yeah, I didn't understand what you're talking about there. Yeah, and it's got that ergonomic, that wider grip kind of deal on the trigger grip, that you like.
On the Skix, it's got two rod nuts. Check out my two nuts on my rod. It's got two of them. You can tighten both my nuts down, thank you.
I like the way you talk.
Biscuits and Shimano Skix be just fine.
Biscuits. That's it.
I'll have that St. Croix.
Kaiser Blade.
Some people call it a Kaiser Blade. I call it a St. Croix Sling Blade. They have a rod called a Sling Blade, don't they?
Oh,
I got a lot of that St. Croix Sling Blade.
He sounds like he's winding up a motor.
I want to tell you what, boys, right now, Dwight Yoakam in that movie is my hero.
Dwight's the man.
Dwight, some people call it a St. Croix Sling Blade. Oh, my God, guys, I'm sorry.
Wow. Yeah, I apologize for that, too.
Anyway. Back to the thing. The Shimano Skix is, like Jay said, is a low, high-end rod, right? Really good cork work on it. Double nuts on your rod. Sort of a fat handle on your rod. Really nice grip for your rod. The one thing I like about it is it does have a lot of... It's not like micro guides on it, but it's got really small eyelets on the end. So you hear these guys talking about, micro guides. They sort of did that. So you have a lot of guides on there and they're all small. It's a great rod in the 9.6 game. What other 9-6 are there, Jay? Isn't there like a chaos rod?
Yeah, chaos has some. Yeah, and a couple series, the green and the red.
Right.
The assault sticks and the 2020 series. Those are good.
Those are good.
You get into one of those for the green series, those assault sticks are about $200. Telescoping, good solid rods. They sell great. That's a good one.
The one thing you'll notice about those rods is those are really big blanks. Like the blanks, the diameter of the blank on the assault sticks are really wide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a bigger, you know.
Right. Yeah. I think you're thinking we just got off the Skicks train there.
Right.
And that's a really low diameter. That's a thin looking. You know,
that's the thing, though, when you get into,
not that it's fragile, they're tough as nails.
They're tough as nails. But what I'm getting at is this is the chaos rods are reminiscent of like tackle industry stuff, where it's like a big blank.
Okay.
So you have the wider diameter, a girthier rod, if you will, Jay.
Yeah.
Do you prefer a thin rod or a girthy rod? Girthy.
Just taking a sip here.
Just going to take a sip.
While I
just act like a turd. If I were in that thing, if you're waiting for the 9'6" shield rod, and you look for that price point, I mean, there's just nothing where I'm sorry we're spinning on this thing, but I'm not a mega fan of the chaos rods because of the diameter of them, which is a feel thing for me, because that means it's wider, blah 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 blah. If I had to pick, like, off the rack at the same price point, and I gotta get a rod that's over 9 foot, I'm gonna go with the Akuma EVX. Sorry, hate it, but that I'm just, you know.
Yeah, they've got 9'3", which is an unusual length, but they telescope and they're super tough too. I mean, those have been out for years and years, and they don't break. Okay. We do not see any issues with those.
Jay,
at all.
What is up with Akuma and their rod lengths? Why do they all do
rod length?
They always do like 6 foot.
Everybody
foot seven.
In the past that's experimented with that, like, oh, we're gonna put out a 7'4", you know,
right?
And then we're gonna put out a 7'9". And then, you know, as rods started getting longer, guys are like, oh, I'm doing an 8'4". And it's just like, I'll look at a coworker and we just kind of look after we hear that and just go, kiss of death.
Yeah, stupid. Kiss of death.
Bad move.
Yeah,
It's
a dog with fleas. Why are we doing? But I like that rod.
Not that it totally is, but.
No, they're great rods, but it's a weird length.
You know, it's like having cork on a musky rod handle. I'm sorry, but that's the way it should be, and that's the way most people want.
Right.
It's what they're looking for. The EVX stuff, or not the EVX,
EVA.
But like the wind grip stuff on the Musky Mojo St. Croix is really cool, but it's not
a
cork.
Musky rod, yeah. It's interesting. I mean, we're just spinning on this, but it's like, my expectations when it comes to musky rod is going to be full cork is what I prefer. And it's like, I don't know. There's just those prereqs, you know what I'm saying? Of like the fit and finish and the feel of it. Like I said, I own some of the EVX Akumas. I think they're an excellent rod. That would be a budget rod that's over 9 foot. The Shimano Skicks is the only other one that's 9'6" that I dig. You can check out the chaos stuff, but like I said, it's, you know, cover earmuffs, Jay. I think most of those are broomsticks with eyelets on them. So, you know, whatever. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I'm horrible.
Yeah, if you're torn, you know, you really got to have a 9'6". There's just not as many flexible choices. It's just like, you know, we had some guys in today at the shop, and one of the guys I mentioned earlier was looking for a spinning rod. Actually, two different guys were.
Yeah.
And they, one was looking at your opinion. Remember when you were talking about those Akuma rods?
Cut the trigger off.
I think it was a while ago, like months ago on a podcast. Yeah. You talked about, I think, like taking a hacksaw and taking the trigger off.
That's what I do.
sanding it down probably and getting it, and then maybe put some epoxy on there. I don't know how you finished it, but that's what he was intending on doing.
I'm going to lay this on you. So the best musky spinning rod I'm aware of, this is what, if you're a client on my boat and you're like, hey, I want to throw a spinning rod. You know, muskies don't take a resume. I've caught plenty of muskies on spinning rods. Clients catch them. It doesn't matter. I'll give you the rundown one more time. Akuma EVX 9'3" collapsible. I take a hacksaw and I saw the trigger off, right? I take a rasp and I smooth that down, hit it with a little sandpaper, right? And then I take heat shrink and put it over that whole ordeal so you never feel it or never see it.
Cool.
That is the best musky spinning rod I've ever thrown. Because that rod's 9'3", because Akuma is not like the craziest musky company, I don't think the backbone of that rod really mattered to them. It casts like a country mile. And it's a 9'3" spinning rod. Come on. That's my jam. I pair that with a, what's the Shimano spinning reel? No, it's the Shimano spinning reel. Yeah, whatever it is.
Oh, there's a million of them.
Yeah, and one of those, and man, that's a just a freaking killer spinning combo.
There's just nothing over 8 foot in musky spinning rods. There just isn't. I mean, our shield rod is an 8 footer.
And I'm telling you right now, that is a bad to the bone spinning combo. You know, if you guys if you guys want to see more, I could hack one up and do a video on it. It's really simple. It takes just a few minutes. I just, Jay, one day I was sick of it. Here I'm throwing a 9'6". Like, it would be like the combo on the boat. Be like, I'm bait caster spinning, right? Here's the dude in the back got this wimpy 8 foot rod. Can't throw anything. I have clients throwing bulldogs on those, on spinning gear. It can work the bait. What does it matter? Muskies don't care. So the same presentation, the same stuff. You got a friend or a dad or a girlfriend that needs spinning gear, just mod out one of the EVX and be done with it. Goodness, I'm just down the rabbit hole. Let's move on. Jason says, I fished the Susquehanna River. I've caught one 43-inch muskie. I've been fishing them for 2 years and have had basically everything from 7.5 to 9.5 foot rods. Today's April 1st, so what should I be doing differently? I put every piece of advice and work I can into getting follows, but it's very disappointing. Just need some solid advice about musky tactics for a river. I need more feedback. I need more success. What can you guys do for me? Help me out. What can I do?
That's Susquehanna River, he said?
Susquehanna. That's Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Not familiar with it. Do you know what kind of water clarity and depth you're talking about?
I've got clients that fish that. Won't name names. I know some spots and some things of that nature. I'm not going to share typical spots, right?
But I mean, just generalize. It's a pretty big river, though, right?
Right, and it flows for a while. There's a lot of fish in that.
It flows for a while?
Jay.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry. That's good.
Listen, folks, this is what I put up with. This is the abuse your dear friend puts up with, Steve. Right? I try my best. Right? When the day is long and the night, hold on. You know, here it is. This is where we cue the REM Everybody Hurts.
Oh, I hate that one.
Right?
Don't like it.
I'm out on the water all day long. Jay's in air conditioning at the muskie shop, and I come on here. And I try my best. And this is what I have to put up with. This is mental abuse, Jay.
Slaving over a hot blow all day.
Slaving over a hot net all day. Shut up. Susquehanna. Here's the deal, dude.
Yes. Tactical analysis of a river we have not been on.
Okay, so there's a video I did about river fishing muskies. It's on the app. You can dig back and find it. Pockets, pools, eddies, slack water, right? Focus on those areas. Fish smart. fish downsize, slow down, right? If it's high bright sun, dead flat calm, it's bad weather, be downsized and slow down. What I can tell you, if you're putting in the time, right, you've got the equipment, like you said, you got these different rods, got all these different stuff. You might own all the baits, you might have all the rods, you better have the retrieves, right? You've heard me say it before, it's not real popular. There are bait owners and there are bait users. I hate to say it, but that's a fact. There's dudes that own a lot of baits that don't know what to do with them. Learn how to use the baits, right? I talk about twitching baits. We talk about jerk baits. We talk about glide baits, all these different methodologies. Dig into that. You know, self-critique, go, you know, am I doing what Joe Bucher does with a shallow raider? Am I doing what Pete Maina does with a Livingston headhunter? Right? Just because you got the baits and you got the gear doesn't mean the fish are going to eat them. You have to do good presentations. If you're doing that, you're in the game. You know, make sure your bucktails, you're running them at different depths, your twitch baits, you're actually twitching them, you're twitching, 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 straight retrieve, twitch, 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 straight retrieve. You know, your bulldogs, you're ripping them, they're diving, they're ducking, they're doing things that are going to trigger a strike. Just because we're in the right place with the right bait does not mean we're going to get a strike. We still have to work for it. Where I would say that you're struggling is you're struggling with retrieves. Brush up on that game. Like I said, there's plenty of stuff here on the app, the 101 section, how to do this, how to do that, how to work this bait, how to work that bait. Dig into that. There's nothing wrong with not knowing the answer, right? I don't know how to work this bait. Spend the time and it will pay dividends, right? I'll tell you, and we're back to Cody Dalton. I had totally written off the toad. That's how I found Cody Dalton. That son of a gun can load a toad like nobody's business. He's a toad. Jay.
Yep.
He's a bona fide toad loader.
I've heard that. I remember when you got that, or you tried the toad and you're like,
yeah, this thing sucks.
But yeah, there's a specific way of running that thing that is a little bit probably atypical.
Right. You got to know how to load that toad.
Yeah.
All right. So if you want to load your toad, you got to do it right. Look at your retrieves, critique your retrieves and go, are these good retrieves or not? The other thing I'd say is this. If you're struggling, you've put that time in and you've had that little success, find a reputable guide to correct those problems. Stop buying baits.
That might be very beneficial.
Right? Sometimes
as I just Googled the Susquehanna, and you're right, it goes for a while.
It goes for a while,
baby goes through like three states. Yeah, and I'm looking at pictures of it. There is definitely sections of that river that look like the lower Mississippi, just like muddy and really, really wide, like a shipping channel kind of stuff. And there's creeker looking sections.
Creekers.
Beautiful sections.
Yep.
Gorgeous pictures here. That looks like a cool.
Oh, it's a great.
It depends on what
river.
Stretches of the river, I guess. Right.
So
I get off that muddy stuff and get in the narrow stuff.
And that's what I was about to go with the creeker. Jay, you know what? I'm making you. Are you prepared?
Yeah.
Take a knee, please. One knee. You are now an honorary creaker.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I dub thee a creaker, son. Yes, sir. Anyway, that's what I would recommend. What Jay was getting at. Small sections, good retrieves. Again, if you're putting in smart time, was it Tom Gelb that said there's time on the water and there's intelligent time on the water?
Yeah, probably.
I think it was. Whatever. Let's say it's Tom Gelb. Mm-hmm. But what I would look at is just like, if you're hitting that wall, get a professional involved. Find a guy that's cool, that's not a douche, and be like, dude, let's hit the water and show me how to work baits. Don't put the pressure like, we have to catch fish.
Yeah, at the very least, he'll probably eliminate bad stretches. That's bad what I was stretches, kind of getting at.
Yeah, eliminate right, bad water, but I don't care about good water, bad water. Show me how to work the baits. And I think that's the biggest thing is, like, I get on the water with people from every walk of life, every, you know, you name it. And the guys that catch fish are the guys with good retrieves. That's it. A good retrieve's going to catch fish just because there's, like, you know, here I am in the bait cave. There are very few baits on this wall that I'm looking at. Okay, let's look at it. Bulldogs are at the top. Well, you can catch a fish on a straight retrieve bulldog, but probably not. You need to know how to work it, right? Tubes, you got to know how to work it. Suics, you got to know how to work it. Bobby baits, Big Daddies, you know, all this T-bones. You got to know how to work a Phantom. Here's a glide. I'm looking at this stuff. So here's my top waters. Until I get down to the walk the dogs, you can straight retrieve it. You got to have good retrieves, right? I'm looking at this wall of baits and I'm going, 70% of these baits, you have to know a retrieve to get them to catch fish.
Okay. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's a lot of baits that require that for
right,
sure.
So I'm looking, yeah, I'm seeing some super shad reps and some crane baits and wileys and jointed shallow ears. Yeah, you can reel them in straight and they'll catch fish eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But the vast majority of these, you need a retrieve to go with it, right? You need a technique to use the bait, right? And this is the thing, man, I hate golf, Jay. I hate the clothes. I hate people that golf.
You've mentioned that a few times.
Golf is boring. Last time I went golfing, I passed out in the cart. Well, it was self-induced. golf is a great analogy with muskie fishing, right? You can go to the store and you can buy the most expensive golf clubs. But if you don't have a good swing, you can't hit the ball far.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And so you got to be able to drive the ball. You got to be able to work that ball to the hole or on the green. Well, now we get up to the green, and now we got to putt. All right, he's on the 16th hole. Or the 18th. How many holes are there, Jay? How many holes do you have?
Tears in his eyes, I guess, as he lines up his last shot.
How many holes do you have, Jay? 4 or 5? So you got to line up on the right hole, the back nine. I don't know, whatever.
He's at the 17th hole at Augusta. Yeah. Tears in his eyes, I guess.
Tears
as he lines
in
up his last shot. The Cinderella kid.
The Cinderella kid. But now we're on. So we've cast the bait. We're working it, and now the fish comes up, and the muskie's coming in. Jay, you can see him coming in.
Ooh.
The fish is now boat side. Now he has to execute the perfect figure eight. Can he do it?
Oh, looks like he's pulled out looks like a 9-iron.
And he pooched it in the first turn.
Oh, just shanked it.
Oh, you shanked it, you hoser.
Oh, man.
So you got the driving
and you got the short game. Yeah, right. You know, those hard to work baits, it's not just working them right, it's figure eighting them right.
It's hard
to figure eight a jerk bait correctly.
Most of you are out there playing with your putter.
There you go.
You know, I don't know what that meant. I heard someone say it on TV. But that's the thing I don't even know what day of the week it is right now. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. Sorry. You have a long game and a short game. Focusing on both of those, like I said, it's good retrieves on the cast and then excellent figure eights, right? Jay, take over because I just blacked out.
Nope. It's a good analogy though with golf. I mean, it really is, because you got to apply that correctly and have all aspects of your musky casting, retrieving, the difficult to retrieve baits correctly, and certainly know how to figure eight them correctly. Like when you had that fish a couple weeks ago, that super hog come up out of nowhere. You were working a jerk bait, and most people, they kind of panic. And I mean, I've seen people try to like a suic or glide bait in general, really popular style of
side to side, walk the dog kind of underwater action baits. And, you know, when you get to the short line at the end of the cast, it's kind of difficult to keep that thing in the strike zone and turn the bait but you got to do it.
Strike zone. All right, folks, Parker. I'm holding it together as best as I can, Jay. Parker says, what clothing do you wear in the early spring when it's cold, Burr?
Plaid pants, white belt.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're off the golf thing now, right? Oh.
You strike me as a Lee Trevino kind of guy.
Let's see. What type of clothing?
I wear pants to start.
I do too.
Do you wear pants? That's cool. That's why we're friends.
Yeah.
I wear pants. That's the best I got.
I'm not sure how to.
Well, I'm okay. All kidding aside, what clothing do you wear in the early spring when it's cold? I'll tell you, the springtime is difficult because it could be cold in the morning and hotter than heck in the afternoon. Dress in layers. Just layer stuff up.
Breathable rain gear out. I mean, that's always nice in the morning when it's cool and you're zipping across and it's, you know, it's going to break the wind, and you can certainly take it off and throw it in your dry storage once the sun comes up a little bit.
Boom. What I rely on, and this sounds like a shameless plug, is there is the Fleece Line Muskie Shop hoodie. You know what I'm talking about, Jay? The Steve Paul V1 Baby Blue or something, whatever that one that I love so much.
That's version 2.
Version 2, Baby Blue.
Blue, one of the greatest songs ever.
Lay, lady, lay.
No.
Oh.
No. Baby Blue.
Till I find a righteous one.
Bad Finger. Anyway,
That's the only band the Beatles signed that were worth a crap.
That's right.
Funny story, Jay. In a different lifetime, before I was playing guitar, I waited tables. And I waited on the guitar player from Badfinger. He's a really cool dude. Anyway, moving on, I'll tell you that at a different time. Yeah, I did. Anyway.
The lead guitar player that didn't off himself.
Yeah. The one that's not dead. Yeah, that was the one. No.
That's really cool.
I was waiting hell, and I waited on the one that offered himself. I like the Fleece Line stuff, so it breaks the wind if you're driving across the lake. Breaks the wind. I like Fleece Line stuff. I'll layer up. Just wear a freaking, you know, thermal shirt. Just wear everything or nothing, whatever you're into. Dress for the conditions. Just wear clothes. I don't know, man.
Bring your sunscreen and use it.
Bring your friggin' checkbook.
That first month, it's brutal. I don't know how you being a redhead, you know, you got to have
redhead. I'm not redheaded. Did you just say I was redheaded?
You got all red hair.
You just call me
Irish blood.
You don't think I have Irish blood, son? I'm a drink. You can't be freaking not Irish. Okay, my mom's maiden name is Collins. All right. So anyway, Austin says, I'm looking for a new musky rod for casting bucktails and other lighter lures. I'm currently looking at a Mojo Musky 8.6, but was wondering about the power. Power.
He said he wants a lighter rod to cast lighter bucktails, did you say?
I'm looking for a new rod for casting bucktails and other lighter lures.
And other lighter lures.
I'm currently looking at the Mojo Musky in the 8.6 length, but was wondering about the power. Is there a big difference between the heavy power and moderate heavy power for this specific rod?
Medium heavy St. Croix are like that 3/4 to 3 ounce lure rating. So that'll cover your bucktails, except for double tens. You want to go up a notch.
Mm-hmm.
And he said other lures, yeah. He's kind of in between there. I'd almost recommend going to a heavy model rather than an extra heavy.
Mm-hmm.
That way you'd be a little bit more inclined to have a, you know, piece of equipment there that would handle a little bit, maybe wider range, because their medium heavies are kind of light for certain baits, you know?
Right. Well, if it doesn't have to be, I mean, it's a weird thing. Okay. We've talked about this before, Jay. If it can handle a muskie, it can throw just about any lure, right? Theoretically. Mm-hmm. It might not be perfect. You don't want to throw a pounder on your medium. Here's where I'm at. Jay's going to talk to you about the different lure weights, but here's what I do. And I actually, guess who I talked to on the phone earlier tonight, Jay?
Joe Booker.
Cody Dolph.
Cody.
And we were joking about, and I'll tell a real story. We were talking about rods. And he said, he was doing a certain presentation. And I said, what were you throwing it on? Did you try to throw it on a medium? It's a very small presentation he did. And he said, hell no, man. I'm throwing that on my shield rod with 100-pound braid. Right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I laughed and I said, yeah, because that's what you do when you're poor. Right? And he and I were laughing about being creakers. That, guess how many muskie rods you can afford, Jay? One.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a dirty old creaker like me and Cody Dalton, and now Jay, Jay's an honorary creaker.
I am, right.
You can afford a muskie rod. There's not muskie rods plural. You have a muskie rod singular. I have been in the habit of having a heavy rod because I can throw an AC Shiner. I can throw a JB Rattler. I can throw a pounder on that one rod. And when you're a dirty ass creaker like I am, you got a musky rod, not my musky rods. Mm-hmm. That is it. You lose it. Guess how many musky rods you have, Jay?
Zero. Oh, you're out of musky rods you lose it.
You got nothing. You're done. You're done creaking. So that is the you're out. You're out. No more creaking for you. You lost it. So when you when you grow up a poor West Virginia, literally, I crawled out of the hills barefoot, covered in coal dust. Cue the sad music. I rolled down the mountain. Go rest high on that mountain. I crawled out of a cave with a musky rod in my mouth and a banjo on my knee.
Mama said, put some more firewood on that steel.
Mama said we need more muskies to eat. Please get them. Oh, God, Jay, I'm a mess. Please, we're starving to death. You go get us more musky meat. I need that musky stew. So when I crawled out of the coal hills, I had a musky rod. You learn to make do, right? What I would say is this. The non-hey, buy more stuff, Steve, because, you know, being poor will make that do it to you.
Or when you're young, you know.
Well, that's, yeah, like, that's what I'm saying.
All of us started out with, you know, we had a fishing rod, you know.
Well, listen.
You had to adapt and learn how to fish.
Why did it say poor now?
Have you seen one setup?
Listen, you ain't got a Jeep like mine being poor, baby. I'm not saying now. It's just a habit. That thrift is doing it with one rod. I want a utilitarian rod that can do it all. That is the heavy 9 foot, 8'6", 9'6", whatever it be, a heavy rod I can get it all done with. That would be my take. I really crawled down the rabbit hole of West Virginia dumbass in there. But Jay, talk lure weights. What would be the appropriate pairing for those smaller lures, though? If he's throwing that 8'6" Mojo Muskie, what should he be thinking about?
Yeah, well, again, in the St. Croix, a medium heavy power is going to be, I think I'd pretty much all across the board, no matter what model, if it's a Premier, if it's a Mojo, if it's a tournament series, they're 3/4 ounce minimum to 3 ounce maximum. And if you start exploring the weights of lures, most bucktails are in that range. You know, there's very few that are lighter. And really the only ones at the top end of the spectrum are the real big double tens. You know, like a Cowgirl is about 3 ounces.
Or Spanky's probably heavier than that.
But barely. I think they're just over 3. So you could get by with it, but those hard pulling baits, you want to go up a power. You want to use a heavy for those type baits. A heavy power is more like a 2 to 8 ounce, and that'll cover pretty wide array of different types of lures, whether it be crankbaits like Depth Raiders and, bigger Phantoms, all those glide baits, perfect rod for Suix, working dive rise baits, and big bucktails. But with that heavy action rod from St. Croix, you could still certainly throw, especially if it's a long rod, you can throw any kind of bucktail. No problem.
You're ready for an unpopular opinion, Jay?
Yeah.
Extra heavy rods are stupid. I'm just going to say it. I've been thinking it for years.
Well, yeah. I don't know if they're stupid, but for someone throwing mag dogs and up in terms of weight,
that's what I'm saying. Like
9 ounces and higher. Yeah, that's great. You really got to have that because the rod's going to load, but you're not overloading that extra heavy. And you got a stiff rod to work and to rip that bait, you know. Some guys fish that way.
I know some people do, but like, don't make that the rod. Like, if you have a rod, don't make it extra heavy, is what I'm saying.
No, like, saying, like, if you fish like one of our guides, Matt Raley,
mm-hmm.
he's won several PMTTs, and
yep.
he's a big tournament fisherman. He's won some boats by doing that. He's won Rangers and stuff, and he guides his brains out. And one of his methods is fishing Medusas really fast
mm-hmm.
and ripping them through shallow weeds. And he's got to have a long, very, very powerful rod to do that effectively with. And, he's still a pretty younger guy, but not everyone has the energy to do that for 8+ hours.
Yeah,
and it's a technique that's paid off countless times. Highly pressured water, guys fishing to lefty, a guy's fishing to the right, and he can run that technique. And that in particular is what I'm getting at, requires that
right,
rod.
That's a specified tool. If you're fishing
in general,
don't go above that. We got one
that's
more.
That's your number four wood.
Four wood.
That's a golf analogy.
That is your 9-foot stiff four wood.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Jay.
Hit me with the last question.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All I can think for some reason, I've had enough Pepsi. Never mind. I won't even go there. Kyle says, what are your basic trolling tips for a beginner? Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Here's the deal. Basic trolling tips. I'll tell you. I really like to start, if somebody's never trolled, I have never caught a muskie trolling, I want you to start with a handheld rod, right? I think the kiss of death on trolling is starting with all the good stuff.
Okay.
Don't rig up 4 Folbies or a trolling mast and run a bunch of rods. The first couple times you go, is you hold a rod in your hand. When you're holding it, I don't care. If you got a console boat, hold it in your left hand off the side. I want you to feel when you turn that wheel or you turn that tail or how that bait reacts. Mm-hmm. You'll feel it slack up. You'll feel it change the way it undulates, the way it vibrates. You'll feel the change every time you turn the steering wheel. You can only really grasp that by having it in your hand and going, whoa. When I turn to the right, that thing really just digs in. And when I turn to the left, it stops vibrating as much. That's huge. Get a feel for the baits, right? What I would say is this. If you want to start trolling, let's say you're a successful caster. I've caught a couple muskies casting, and I know a really good spot. I got my best spot. I want you to troll with one rod around that spot, right? Find the structure, find the cover, find the things in and around that one great spot and handhold that rod until you connect with a fish. Right? That puts you in contact with the bait. You understand the things I've talked about in the past. you hear the transition between soft and bottom, or soft and hard bottom, right? We're always looking for soft bottoms, hard bottoms. Mm-hmm. And you know when you found a soft bottom, and you know when you found a hard bottom. You can feel it in your rod, right? Soft bottom, it's a softer return. Hard bottom, rock, rubble, really articulated. It's really got a when that crankbait's digging in. Spend the time and don't, again, this is unpopular opinion number two of the night. When you start trolling, don't concentrate on catching a fish. The fish will come. Focus on learning what the baits are going to do in this new presentation style, right? Once you're dialed in, like, let's say a depth rater, let's say shallow rater, let's say a crane bait, let's say a headhunter, a jake, whatever it is, you'll get a feel for what that bait's doing. What I would recommend is the basis, the 101 trolling crankbait to me is a depth rater, right? 8-inch straight depth rater and drag that thing around, right? Drag it around. That's what it feels like when it's snagged in weeds. That's wood. That's rock. That's soft bottom, hard bottom, blah, blah, blah. One thing that is invaluable, right, is getting the first few snags out of the way. Right? Guess how you get a snag out while you're trolling? Back the boat up. That's how I do it. Right? Pull the other rods up, back up, pull it out backwards. Get those out of the way. But handhold that rod. Feel what the rod is doing. A great habit to have from day one is you're driving like you're drunk. Don't drive in a straight line. Swerve. In and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. So that bait is moving and grooving, right?
For sure.
Reference the trolling charts on the 360 app. We've got a lot of, for the main trolling baits, anybody should be running the charts on there, from headlocks to depth raters, double Ds, triple Ds, jakes, grandmas. Check that out so you have a clue. You don't have to have a line counter. Don't go full tilt. And that's my thing I'm going to tell you. If you've never trolled, don't go, I need 4 line counters, 4 rod holders. I'm going to get planer boards and I'm going to go for it. Don't do that. Learn it with one rod first. Start adding 1 rod, 2 rods, 3 rods, 4 rods, right? And once you understand how wide you can turn, right? I need to double back on this bay. I need to double back on this pass. You got 2 rods and you're not snagging those up or twisting them up. Keep adding that game as you get comfortable. But the biggest thing is understanding how the baits feel, how they react when you're turning and swerving. That would be my take on it. Jay, what do you think? What's some beginner troller basics?
No, I agree 100%. And, you know, once you start catching fish using that one line technique you just described in detail, I might add.
In detail.
Detail. Let's say you go out with 4 lines right off the bat. You get a Chinese fire drill.
Yeah.
Absolute nightmare. You got boards out, and then all of a sudden you put the boat in neutral, and everything stops moving. And before we had trolling here, not that long ago, I was roll trolling a bit. And I remember the first one I got roll trolling, a 16-foot aluminum boat. It was I could get her up to about 1.9 with no wind. But anyway, I caught fish. I caught a few fish doing it. And the first one I got, I had 2 lines out. And it got wound up in the slack line.
Yep.
And I don't know I'm sure you've been there with like 80-pound power pro or whatever I had on, wrapped around there. And then it got into the leader and... Oh man, it was a mess. I just wanted to get the fish off and get it back in the water as soon as possible. It was only like a 40-inch or 38 or something like that, but my lines were junk. I had to cut it. It was so bad. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you get multiple lines going out there, it's going to be unmanageable, and you might hurt a fish by doing that. You know, something. You know, I could only reel up. I had to hand line the thing in. It was so tangled. It was. Absolute amateur nightmare.
I've got an embarrassing story, which is the first time I tried to troll 4 at a time, me and Jody Michael were out on the boat.
Okay.
I made a turn so bad I fouled four of them up in like one bundle.
Yep. Anyway, there's a lot of line.
There's a lot of line, and literally we just cut them all. And I said, "This." She looked at me, and we looked at each other, and we just said, "This took the sport out of it. This sucks." I mean, yeah. You got to learn, you know. Don't. As much as we love to come out, and we're coming out there like Homer LeBlanc, Sea Hunt. You know, just take it in baby steps. Like the, you know, what about Bob? Baby steps. So. You know, one or two and three and four. I feel pretty comfortable right now. I can run six and not sweat it, right? But that's because I know that I'm going to put this kind of bait on the outside, this kind of bait on the inside. I'm going to turn this way left, turn this way right. You'll get a feel for it. Just baby step up to it. That would be the best thing. Focus on areas you already know there are fish there. Once you get one in your butt, go, I got my first trolling fish under my belt. The sky's the limit. Jay, we've been rambling on forever. I have to get up in the morning and do more musky guiding. I'm going to shut up, all right?
Me too.
All right, guys. Thank you. We tried our best. It is another crap show, Musky 360 Podcast. Later.
Thank you, guys.
In the night is yours alone.
Jay. Hey, listen, folks. This is what I put up with. This is the abuse. Your dear friend puts up with Steve. Right? I try my best. Right?
Hang on. Don't let your